Welcome back to the Mel Kay Show. This is very exciting. I've been trying to get on the best people out there from all different walks of life. And my guest today has not only done work that is way ahead of its time and truly phenomenal investigative journalism and reporting, and also solution-oriented things that maybe people aren't thinking about and going forward. But he also is a friend of mine from Union of the Unwanted. Everyone knows that I love that that situation over there, because we really get to hear all different points of view. So for those of you who don't know him, I'm very excited to welcome Ryan from The Last American Vagabond. Thank you for joining me, sir.
My pleasure. Happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
I'm so happy. I'm so happy because I've been following you for so long. Now, if you're watching this and you do not know about or follow The Last American Vagabond, he has some of the greatest writers out there, best journalists, and also the most censored people, which should let you know right now, including himself, that they are onto something. And there's a lot out there that the powers that be are working very hard to shut down and silence. And Ryan is not letting that happen. So, Ryan, tell a little bit about your background, and then we'll get into where we are and where we're going.
It, you know, there's a lot of different directions to take in, you know, like the ultimately I never planned to be in this field, you know, growing up and so on. Like I am a chef. I went to the Culinary Institute of America, Napa Valley. That was my you know, still one of my biggest passions. I trained to be that. I worked in some of and managed some of the and was a chef for some of the best restaurants in the world. Really, I worked to places like Ella and even staged at places like the French Laundry while I was in school there. And, right. You know, and really was just super passionate about it. Now, that was something, just actually a quick note on that. I found it a really interesting overlap. How many people in this field or in how many fields of artistic endeavors overlap? And I do find this to be similar, right? Where people that, you know, like in a kitchen, it's very artistic and you find a lot of them play guitar or things like that. And the same kind of thing I found with this field. There's a lot of people, a lot of critical thinkers in actually a lot of anti-establishment people in those kind of fields. But right. So I did that for a long time and I'm still very passionate about it. But there was a point at which I was in between jobs. Honestly, it was a little bit kind of, I wanted something different. You know, and I was traveling, and at the point I picked up a sous chef position in Texas, and we were kind of traveling with my friend around the country, and just randomly decided to start a blog, actually, because the guy I was traveling with did like a 49ers sports thing. And I'm like, I want to do something about that. And just randomly started a blog. It was actually blog.com at the time, focused on cannabis law reform. That's all it was. Wow. Long story short, again, I can go into so many avenues. It just kind of developed over the years into something that is, you know, just what we're being lied to about. You know, there's issues of paramount importance that we need to kind of flesh out, you know, in an objective, nonpartisan way. And I never expected it to be what it is today. It was really a side project. And there was also a point at which I realized that this was something I really cared about and made the very dangerous choice to step out on a limb and try to make this my full-time career, which is where I am today. Right. And I got to tell you, man, that was a really very uncomfortable couple of years, you know, where you're walking that line and, you know, yeah, people are donating and you're barely making it by selling crypto to try to make this happen, you know, things like that. And luckily enough, I have got enough support to where we made this into something as large as it is. And we brought on people like Whitney Webb and Derek, yeah, Rose and Robert Imlikesh and Matt Arrett. And, you know, it's just I'm very proud of what we put together, you know, and honored to be associated with people like you and everybody in Union of the Unwanted. You know, it's a really momentous thing we're doing today.
It is. It's incredible. And I got to tell you, I started doing Union close to the beginning, and Whitney and Derek and you and Matt and all these people. It's so crazy that over the time that it's evolved, it's everyone evolved that I really do follow and respect. I look at your site every day to see if anything new has come up, because it is so ahead of the times, and it also puts together dots. I think you have a real gift. You know, you say that you were a chef, and I was a screenwriter. So for me, it's also about putting together the story. You know, being a chef is very, very creative, but there's a method to the madness, and it's not like it's throwing ingredients in and that's it. And it is about connecting dots and putting things together that don't, you know, other people might not see until they see the final product. It's like with writing a script or whatever. It's very,
that's really
very
interesting.
Much about that. Yeah.
If I can comment on that really quickly, that's a really fascinating overlap. Like, you know, I've always thought similar things about the like I kind of was saying, the overlap there, but the point you're making about just specifically in regard to ingredients, and that's kind of also the artistic side of that, you know, how you play with it. But you're right. There is, you know, a level of what's the right word for it? you know, you have to, you can't just mind, like, especially in, for those that are kitchen stuff, they'll know the difference, hot side, cold side, like bakery versus, you know, that on the savory side of things, you can't just, you know, follow along with a recipe. There's intuition. There is a understanding how things work, even from the science side of it, understanding why foods act differently under certain temperatures. You know, anyway, I can go out, I'm a nerd about that stuff, like talking about why egg becomes a solid at a certain temperature. And it's like, why does that make sense? And, you know, that kind of stuff. But also the side of it where it comes into kind of the multitasking, like people don't really understand what it takes to manage a restaurant in general, but specifically the kitchen side of things, the long-term thought process it takes to plan out ordering and cooking and having things ready and the times they go bad. And, you know, people out there who work in kitchens know exactly what I'm talking about, but it is so much more complicated than people realize. And I really do think that's given me an interesting perspective when it comes to things like this. So it's interesting you say that. I've never really thought about it like that.
Yeah. Well, I went to NYU and I started in theater. Like, I started doing like off-Broadway stuff at 18, 19. And I have to tell you, like, all along, I obviously worked in restaurants because that is part of the job.
Right.
On the job. So, and always did.
I think everybody should have to do that at some point in their
life. Me too. Listen, and you know what? I'm so grateful that the truth is, because this journey has been so nuts, that I learned how to bartend pretty young. And I always say to people, if you learn how to bartend, you're always going to be employed, you know, no matter what, no matter what happens, you can always find a job. And even in the last 5 years, as my life changed dramatically, and I took this road as well, I always think in the top of my head, if all else fails, I can move somewhere on some island and bartend.
Right.
No,
seriously,
what.
Though, everybody needs a bartender.
So, but the thing about the kitchen is great. And I have great respect for people that run. I have friends that still run giant restaurants to the level of French Laundry. And I have to tell you, it is very commendable. But honestly, some of these people, including what you're talking about with yourself, it requires a lot of pulling together of so many different skills and skill sets. That's why so many fail, is because you can't just... you know, you have to be great at a lot of different things to even make that work, let alone have a following, let alone have a restaurant last more than a couple of years. So it is a thing. And so when we're talking about where we are now in America, in the world, because it's not America, you know, a lot of people put up this thing and say a lot how Trump was saying, like, if they're not after me, they're after you. And I say, they're not after America, they're after the world. And I think a lot of people don't really understand that. There's still people that say there's no they. And it's like, yeah, they tell you. So what is great, especially about your site, is that you go into many different things. But I noticed that with a lot of the articles that you guys cover, you pull in all the different ingredients and show you at the end what the full dish looks like. You know, not to be so cliche and weird.
No, I was actually, it's perfect. You brought it right back in. I love that. And you're right, though. So go ahead.
Yeah, but that is a gift of your site. I actually have it as a recommended site on the top of my site, because so I do want to go to that, to the final what feast these people think that they're serving us. Because this past week, I know you looked at it, and so did people that you and I are along the same lines with our thinking, is the UN came into New York City. I just left it after my whole life. I left behind a dystopian cesspool of a carcass of New York City. And only people that live there really understand what I'm saying, because it is an obvious controlled demolition of New York City. But like Pan Am and Hunger Games, these people go in there for the tribute event of the General Assembly of the UN. Not only does the UN have their event, they have a World Health Organization simultaneously, an IMF simultaneously, and of course, the Clinton Global Initiative is now in the mix. The same week Zelensky comes in. If people don't see it, they had this big show in the sky above the carcass of New York City, celebrating. I swear, it felt like we were watching Hunger Games. And I want your thoughts on these people. No matter what we say or do, they're not giving up. They're going to keep going. No matter what, until they're stopped. So when you're seeing that they're doing that, and the pageant and circumstance, everything that they're putting out there is even more extreme as they go. So you just watch them all meet. What are your thoughts on where that is?
Yeah, I think it's exactly like you're highlighting. It's in my opinion, and again, I don't even think we should. It's not. It's like you said, it's openly stated. I mean, this is not an opinion. They're openly justifying the, I would argue, revealing the existing world government structure. But for most people, it's the, you know, we're justifying the building of this new concept. It's been around for a long time. But that's the really alarming aspect of this. I was just talking about this with somebody, I forget, where I was mentioning that, you know, the WHO, the UN, these are supposed to be like administrative bodies, ultimately, right? I mean, look, we point out like WHO or UN resolutions that say this is not supposed to happen. The US and Israel and most powerful, they don't, half the time they just disregard them entirely, that there's no punitive side of that. And that's how it should be. Ultimately, there should not be some ultimate government, you know, world government body that can then dictate, supersede our sovereignty. And that's really what the big issue is. Now, as we know with the pandemic treaty and the amendments as well, they're coming out and saying, you know, we are going to be able to supersede these things. We need to be able to have, you know, punishment if they don't follow along and so on. There's two videos that come to mind. I just saw the UN video where he comes out and states that, it, you know, what they claim misinformation. Really, all it means is people that say something other than the narrative are a clear and present global threat, which is, by the way, a legal term. And that's a concerning concept, clear and present danger kind of an idea. They're laying the groundwork to justify people saying other things than they say are need to be taken action against. And that's not just administrative. Like, they're driving action point where they're, I think, arguing they need to take action. And then we've got the WHO side of it, where we just saw Ryan yesterday say basically that we're going to do all the things that everyone's been calling conspiracy theory. We're going to have the One Health mandate. We're going to have the pandemic treaty. We're going to roll this out. We're all one world and one concept. I mean, that's what we're all talking about.
Right.
And then we say it and you're a crazy conspiracy theorist. He comes out and literally outlines this in an almost forceful way. And there's another narrative for why it's not the same thing we're saying. It's mind blowing. But over to your question, I think it's very obvious that this is about building out a system where we no longer have the ability. And arguably even now we do, I question that, but we're told we do. And I think there's even power to that, but to the point to where we don't even perceive ourselves to have any influence over the outcome. We right. just trust our betters. That's the scientism technocracy kind of mindset. They're supposed to, you don't know. Remember in the beginning of COVID, you guys don't know. You're not a scientist. You never went to medical school. Well, okay, fair enough. But that doesn't mean I don't know those things. Like, it's an interesting argument. So I think that's really where this goes. And I honestly think there's a lot of people involved. I don't know whether majority or not, but that genuinely think they're doing these things for a greater good.
Yeah.
But even within that, there are people that are knowingly doing things that they know will hurt people because of a greater good. I still think those are just as, I mean, evil, for lack of a better word in that context. But that's where I see this going.
It's funny. I do a lot of work. Somebody handed me when I was early in college, Eichmann in Jerusalem, The Banality of Evil by Hannah Arendt. I became obsessed with her. I ended up writing a screenplay about her. But I have to tell you that she had a whole concept where she talked about the cog in the wheel and how people tried to make it, like, or at least Eichmann's, for people that don't know, Eichmann was one of the architects of the trains that picked people up and took them to the concentration camps. He was the only one tried in Israel, a very controversial trial as it is. But what I do have to say is she came up with this concept she talked about in her book, on revolution and in responsibility and judgment, where she talked about that the argument was that he was a cog in the wheel. You know, that's like people know of Eichmann and they know that he says, well, he was following orders, which isn't what he said, but that's what people think. Mm-hmm. And it's the banality of evil concept. And you know what she said that really reminded me of today? She said that if they're putting on trial or having these hearings or whatever against an institution, then if everybody's guilty, nobody is. And so if they're trying to go with this concept of somebody's just a cog in the wheel, like, say, Tedros or Klaus Schwab or whatever, these people are named names. They're real people. But when it comes to a lot of, especially in America, FBI, DOJ, whatever it is, as long as they're not naming specific people that were at the table making the plan and calling for whatever it was, whatever you think, the JFK, whatever it was, there were people at a table. In an event that actually chose this. But if we're constantly putting on trial an institution or a bureaucracy, then nobody's ever going to be held accountable. And we want people, I know you and I do, to take personal responsibility for this nation, but we should be demanding everyone does. So there is a constant thing of this never naming names, the UN, the World Health Organization. It's like we have to start really looking at it in terms of who, the actual person, because the cog in the wheel is a whitewash of guilt. It's everyone is guilty. Nobody's guilty. So we are at a place where I think people like you and with your site and a lot of people you work with have been calling people out by name. And that is a real big problem. But I think we need to see a lot more of that, especially in America, because you, like me, says we're not voting our way out of what's happening to this country.
Right. And Whitney Webb's work is one of the best on that topic about really just like piercing through all the BS and just pointing to the person who is really the one making these calls. And your point is really important because what we're seeing today, especially with COVID-19, I mean, really, it's just about every one of these narratives that are just as clumsy and obvious as I've ever seen in my life. But in COVID illusion in particular, it's amazing to take a step back and look at the beginning narrative and how quickly they immediately started to roll these things back. You know, like the narratives were collapsing, the masks weren't working, these things weren't effective. And, you know, now it's just like, I mean, I just saw Eric Topol put out a post saying the new shot will help reduce long COVID symptoms by 30-40%. And I'm like, this is absolutely clownish. So now you sold this as something that would remove their risk from getting the illness. Then they proceeded to get sick repeatedly.
Right.
Then you tell them they got long COVID, which is clearly vaccine side effects with an overlap of psychosomatic issues. I've seen that's what the peer-reviewed study seems to find. Studies, and then says, okay, we'll take that same shot to reduce the symptoms only 30-40% for the thing that we're causing with this injection. I mean, that's ridiculous. Yeah. So this narrative has completely and utterly collapsed, right? But they're still just driving it forward. Actually, hold on. I think I just lost the point there. What was your question again? So I don't lose my point.
No, my thing was that we keep having hearings and stuff. Even if it's Joel Roth or it's Walensky or it's anyone, they sit there. Or yesterday, Merrick Garland. It's hard to believe this is America, but I have to tell you, we're holding the institution accountable. Rarely, if ever, do we hold the person, and that is I think a real problem.
Completely agree. Well, so what I was going with that is that, so we have a situation where it's obvious that it's fallen apart. And and when you point at the establishment level, the answers we continue to get, like we see, and we predicted this in the beginning, because this is customary. Oh, well, we acted with limited information and we did the best we could. And so now we're going to, you know, and okay. So let's just even say that was the truth. There were still very serious consequences of those the actions you took. Are you literally telling us that nobody's responsible just because you didn't have all the information? That's crazy. And that is quite literally the lack of accountability, either institution or individual.
Right.
That's alarming. And so your point is absolutely correct. We should be focusing in on people that literally made these choices. What was your logic? What were you looking at? And why did you not see this? Like going back to someone like Neil Ferguson,
right.
Imperial College of London, we can prove now that he knowingly used personal opinion to flush out this opinion and 3.6% infection fatality rate. That's shockingly wrong. And we can prove that Pfizer's own information and even the reevaluation of the data from the beginning shows us that they knew that wasn't true. And yet nothing happens. And he gets promoted. Things go forward.
Exactly. Yeah. The specific people. I mean, to this day, I don't understand. I think Hillary Clinton should have been arrested right after Libya. Like, for me, that was like such a crime that she's laughing on TV about it. We had no business going there. There was no reason that he just was trying to break out of the mold that they had put him in. He wasn't going to play along anymore. That just like they took out a lot of people, the whole color revolution model. And again, to watch the Clintons have a event in tandem with millions of dollars being spent on it, with John Podesta and Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton up there now saying that they're going to take the lead in relief in Ukraine, the Clinton Global Initiative. And after you did a lot of reporting, I know Whitney did, other people did, about the horror that is Haiti. I've talked to people from Haiti. I walked by the UN every day on the way to work when I was a few years ago before COVID. And I'll tell you right now, there's people standing outside of the UN from Haiti demanding the arrest of the Clintons. So here we are. They're on stage as if they've never done anything wrong. You brought up Whitney Webb. You and I have both covered it. Clinton has never been questioned about Jeffrey Epstein. And so that's another thing, like talking about, well, if everyone is guilty, then no one's guilty. We're moving on. Well, okay. What this is shocking stuff to me about the Clintons, and that now they are being injected. And what they're also saying is that the World Bank will be working with the Clinton Global Initiative to help facilitate rebuilding Ukraine. When we knew all along in 2019, Zelensky talked about rebuilding Ukraine before there was a war. So
making it a big Israel. It was his words, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So what? I mean, it's amazing. I cannot believe this, but seeing Bill Richardson die and Rumsfeld and some of these other real, I believe, criminals die, watching the Clintons up there again is so shocking to me.
It is. I just talked about this overlap. I mean, first of all, where it comes back to me is, I mean, you're right. It's egregious, but that is through a state action level, which is very different, but it's obviously one of the most obvious criminal acts. With that obvious point, then every one of them should be in jail for Iraq, for, you know, all of them. I agree with you, though. But so what I find more specific, where the average person was much more introduced to this in a pretty objective way, was when those gentlemen from Boston presented their evidence to Congress about pay to play.
Yeah,
it was. I mean, this is one of the most alarming. This I often bring this up in many contexts. These people, it was provable evidence. They had emails, they had documentation, they had, I mean, they nailed this to the wall. It was a hours long testimony. It was crazy. Nothing happened. Literally nothing. Basically, they just quietly backed like that Homer Simpson meme, backed into the bushes, and they changed. It went away, and now they've got so it went from Clinton Foundation to the Clinton Global Initiative. You know, it's like this same kind of just shift name discussion, which is the same thing, right? We're talking about the same thing. And so they then get away from all of that. And then of course the Haiti part of it was one of the overlaps to that earlier part, and it is one of the most egregiously criminal things I've ever seen. I mean, I just talked about the article I wrote in 2016. I forget the year I wrote it. The doctor who killed himself.
Yeah,
they literally say there was a knife, a butcher's knife, sticking out of his chest. It's just so absurd. It's like I said with Gary Webb shooting himself twice in the head. Suicides, they tell us, right? A doctor's not going to do, you know how impossible that is to break your chest plate inward like this? I mean, a doctor's not that stupid. That was a message as far as I'm concerned. And then, of course, you overlap what he was saying about the Clintons. I mean, I just watched a show I did last night. I mean, it's scathing. He's talking about how people were there, like they were supposed to have sent millions and millions of dollars to the very hospital that he was going to work at. And he shows up, there's people there with, he said the whole hospital smelled like rotting flesh. There were people with pus and issues and maggots on their wounds. They had no machinery. All they saw was Cheerios on the tarmac that weren't even being used. And this is the guy screaming about this. Even corporate media covered what he was saying. And then he shows up dead. You know, I mean, it's just unbelievable. So sorry, I was just on the little tangent.
No, that's really important because people have to understand that what they did, it still has never been talked about. Nothing's been done about what they did in Haiti and mm-hmm. you know, what came of that and what really was going on there and that they continue it. But the bottom line is you're talking about this doctor. This is very important to talk about because these people die when they come up against them. And a part of shutting up all these people is so that they can come up again. And yet nobody is going after the specific people. The other thing about the Clinton Global Initiative and Clinton Foundation is that it's claimed behind the scenes that Jeffrey Epstein started that with them, along with Stephen Bing, who jumped off a building in the middle of Hollywood, in the middle of COVID, supposedly. Epstein, who supposedly killed himself, another partner at Weinstein, who nobody really understands why he didn't make a deal when he had so much information on the Clintons, especially. And here we are, you know, they're up this week anointing themselves, the global leaders of the world. And to me, the people can't just get behind that and say, oh, enough.
Well, the craziest thing for me is that, like, look, the average person hears a lot of this, even though I think New York Post and even CNN covered the fact of how that doctor died with the knife and everything, even being slightly suspicious. And yet you bring it up and they go, ah, fake news. Even somebody commented that on the article when I posted mine without even looking at it. And I simply just posted the mainstream article underneath. And I'm like, people like you are worse than liars. And then he blocked me because, of course, you can't be proven wrong. Of course, I kind of jabbed him. But either way. But the point is that that we can see that they broke the law on a real, visceral, like nonpartisan level. They broke the law and nobody seems to care. And not only that, that now they're back in the position with nothing that ever, they didn't even got a slap on the wrist. Nothing. They benefited wildly at the expense of these people. And then they're going to go do the same thing. And of course, it's Ukraine, one of the most corrupt places on the planet that even the corporate media was calling out, you know, before Russia invaded. And now it's a bastion of democracy, apparently, but which is not true.
Right.
But what's interesting is that how exactly are they going to rebuild Ukraine while they're still in the middle of a war? Like, make sense of that for me. This is going to be money laundering as easy as I've ever seen it. But also ask why it makes sense for any tangential government concept, which is that what they pretend to be, the Clinton Initiative, or even just directly from the government, why they're refusing to let people rebuild Syria right now. Like for the last 10 years,
they just totally ignore Syria. Yemen's ignored and Lebanon, all
they won't let it happen. They're standing in the way of the money. It's crazy.
Yeah, but that's where you jump to the next thing, which is something I know you discuss a lot and you write about a lot and people don't know, which is this concept of them helping developing nations that never develop is all about keeping people, you know, stealing resources, right, keeping people enslaved, not rebuilding. Because I say this a lot on shows about Africa, which is, if we just really did what we were supposed to be doing in Africa, developing the nation, of course, that you just look at Israel, you know that you can have a thriving farming and agricultural system anywhere in the world. We have the technology, the ability. There's no reason we can't. You can have clean water, internet, development, all of that.
Right.
Yet for the entire time the UN's been around and the World Bank, they've been developing Africa. And it hasn't developed at all. And that is by design. That is on purpose. So if you could, because you have covered Syria a lot, which obviously we shouldn't be there. And it's egregious and horrible. I do think finally, Assad is trying to move forward without us. But what are we doing there? What is the justification? I don't even know why we ever went there to begin with, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, it's a whole mire of multiple narratives and lies and misinformation. But, you know, I think, yeah, I mean, just to go to that, I was going to say something else about Syria. But the point is that in this case, it stems back to illegal operations from the very beginning. I mean, first of all, the idea is this is an extension of the idea of 9/11, right? This was one of the moments where they opened the door. So originally it was the idea that they were able to, go into Iraq and Afghanistan under this unverifiable broad argument that it was people that invaded our country, even though we know and can prove with receipts, James Corbett and others, that that was not what actually happened. Right. But the idea being that this was okay, you know, that's what we're limited to. Then, of course, they just extended this mission creep style, which always they always do, to argue that, well, OK, we can extend this to where we can argue that they're connected to these groups from these areas, which that just basically means, as we've then seen it go forward, anywhere they claim bad guy that we're going to pretend is connected over here, even though you can show literal funding from the U.S. government or arming or moving, that we're going to go after them. And really, it ends up being the country getting destroyed. So Syria was one of the earliest examples of that. And I am very it's hard to say it's ever about one thing. There's a lot of different factors, but one of the most obvious in the long-term agenda, you can go back to people like Zbigniew Brzezinski, who, by the way, is Mika's dad from Morning Joe, which is always how the media works.
Way worse than that. The son is the ambassador to Poland, and the other son is the head of, basically at the top of the Atlantic Council. You can't get more deep swamp than them.
But what's funny, when you those are good points, but to reach the average normie, it's always good to be like, oh, that girl you watch on TV every morning, agenda, but you're definitely right. But what's important is that, so he laid out the idea of the balkanization of the Middle East, starting with Afghanistan in the 70s, right? And talked about all of this, and Syria was a primary objective because of the connection between these areas, the land bridge concept. And so then, of course, what happened? Oh, well, they 9/11, we have to start with Afghanistan. Oh, what a coincidence, right? So they go into Afghanistan. And so now we're in Syria. And the idea is, obviously, I think Iran, let's not forget seven countries, five years concept. And that Iran was one of these directions. And they have to maintain Syria to maintain their ability to arm the front lines and be able to bring in, you know, all sorts of things. That's the land bridge concept. If they lose their position in Syria, they really can't wage an effective war from these locations against Iran and everything else. But then you can get into oil and wheat and, you know, just vitriol, really genuinely just petty argue, like the idea that, well, we lost and Assad's still in power, so we're just going to not allow you to rebuild. But we care about the Syrian people, right? We're going to starve them to death and make sure they can't heat their homes, but we care about them. You know, it's disgusting. There's a lot more we can get into, but that's kind of the best, I would argue, simplistic point.
Yeah, and you know what? There was some kind of vote in our, you know, I'm sure you agree with me, like our government has zero power. So when they had their vote to get out of Syria and people were voting against it, I don't even think these people know what they're voting for or against at all. They're just voting however they're told to vote. But I couldn't believe it. And I thought, nobody's even standing down there justifying being there. They didn't even feel that they owed that to us and we're paying for it. And I think probably with what you're saying, the most important thing is to keep the wars going, despite what all the people of planet Earth want. The people that make the money off the wars want the wars to keep going. So we had this situation. Go ahead.
No, just that's an important. See, what I was saying doesn't even necessarily overlap. I mean, overlaps, but that's another angle to it. Like the merchants of death and the multi-billion-dollar corporations that you could even argue potentially have more power than governments today. You know, that they're the ones. I would say that in the context of like whether maybe like Israel, U.S. or U.K. You know, but definitely more power than most governments, but in the context of the leading ones. But either way, you know, whether the you know, kind of supranational corporations, intelligence apparatus, whether that's just the government today, you know, there's big questions. But that drives a lot, you know. And then you got Israel and the idea of how they're, you know, battle tested weaponry that they're testing on Palestinians. And, you know, so that's a whole different ballgame. So you have to realize there's always these multifaceted agendas. And you can even go back to the idea of just basic resources. Now, you know, it's like, oh, that's so in the 2000, you know, 1990s. No, they still care about oil, right? They still care about gold and stealing resources. So all those definitely play a factor, you know?
Yeah, it's very sad. It's very sad because, you know, these are some of the most beautiful places in the world that have been torn up and destroyed and not allowed to rebuild. And it's really, really tragic. You know, but we keep hoping and praying, and I do, that, you know, something changes. But you and I read a lot of your work, and everyone should, look at this and look at all of this in context to where we are now. A lot of people talking left and right, Republican and Democrat, which I can't even believe people still think that that's real in any way, shape or form. I think both sides, this Win Red, Act Blue, are just giant conglomerate $1 billion corporations of some sort that need to keep going with the status quo of us versus them. Mm-hmm. Oh, look at the Republicans. Oh, look at the Democrats. Give us more money. It's just so disgusting on such a massive level. But here we are, a lot of people talking about the 2024 election. Not only am I not sure there's going to be one, but I also believe that our country is a captured entity of the I call them the billionaire globalist oligarchy. But whatever the case may be, America's in serious, serious trouble. The stakes for our nation are very high. I sometimes also talk about, when I talk about the Hunger Games and Pan Am and like where we are, you know, Joe Biden did sign that Declaration of North America treaty thing, which nobody seems to talk about, that basically was creating a ward out of the Hunger Games of America, Canada, and Mexico. So where we are going into this, how do you look at this? I think that people are pretending and living in some kind of illusion or some kind of idea that we're going into another election phase that has any bearing to anything we've ever seen before. Mm-hmm. I don't think that. What are you seeing?
Yeah, I think this is always a hard conversation because it's one of the most, even people that understand that this is broken have a really hard time taking the step of going, okay, fine, it doesn't matter. Like, I'm being lied to. Checking that box every 4 years means nothing, or at the very least has no real effect on the ultimate outcome. Even people that know better have a really hard time kind of coming to terms with that. And I point out that most of the people in political positions are not in the know, in my opinion. I really mean that. Like, people, you know, the Pelosi's and Lindsey Graham's of the world, I think they're led to believe that they, I don't know if we can cuss in the show, but they know everything. Well, just, you know, they know everything that's going on in the world. And I quite frankly think that they are very limited, especially like the Pelosi's and Maxine Waters of the world. They could barely, or Biden can barely tie their shoes, it seems. But my point is they don't know what's really going on, you know? And I think that what we have to understand is that there's 1,000 examples. And the reason I say that point is because they're the ones, I think, in some cases, that believe that we do have some kind of a democracy. But it's very clear. We have all of the evidence you could ever possibly need to show you at the very least that the system is broken, or at the very least that whether you think it might translate to an effect that they're able to manipulate it. And then you have to question whether it's ultimately effect. And we have things like Clint Curtis, who testified to a state Congress that he was paid to alter these machines. And I mean, it's very verifiable, right? You could prove it. He had the receipts to show it. And then the next election, they used the same damn machines, right? Yep. Or the fact that we have, from one election to the next, you've got Democrats saying Russia stole it. And then the next one, they're saying that the Democrats stole it. So very clearly, a child could see that, okay, so both sides think that the election can be stolen. Okay, so then why is it that when it comes, you know, the point we're seeing now, Democrats go, you can't argue that the our elections are, like, that you're somehow undermining democracy by pointing out the thing they said a couple elections ago. It's really stupid. So the point is, everybody seems to be aware that there's cheating, that there's manipulation, that the system is broken. But then when you come to the next point and say, okay, well, then why would you vote? Well, because it's the most important thing, and it's a democracy. It's, you know, it's not logical. We need to recognize that our vote is being manipulated, and taking part in this system, in my opinion, is simply giving your consent to the continuation of the same broken model. Now, the illogical question to follow is, okay, well, then what should we do, Ryan? And I'm not saying I have all the answers. I will give you some thoughts on it, but the point is, it's not, you shouldn't require a solution from me to recognize that this doesn't work. It's kind of crazy to just, it's like literally doing the same thing, expecting different results, go back and just go, well, I'll vote again because, you know, what else am I going to do when you just prove to yourself that it doesn't make a difference? But I will tell you that there's more things that you can do on a daily basis that have 1,000% more political effect on the world and the outcome of a lot of different political things than voting. I mean, everything, in my opinion, you could do. If you want to go vote, I'm not telling you not to. That's your right, right? But I would say if you're going to vote in a way that would make the most difference, go to the county level, go to the local levels. Even then, I still question it, but I think if there's going to be anything that could still be uncompromised, it would be something at the local level. But with all the evidence we have, we know that they're manipulating. And then you can even get into things like gerrymandering, you know, the way that they alter. I mean, there's 1,000 ways. But the analogy I used to use is that there's a bunch of levers all these different mechanisms they can pull. And so it, as the things come down, they can start, oh, we're going to change the vote here. We're going to gerrymander this. We're going to change this. We're going to remove the ability to vote because of driver's license. You know, all these different things they do, and it manipulates the outcome.
Yeah,
I think ultimately we've gotten to the point, though, where this is literally nothing. Like, it does not translate to the outcome at all. And quite frankly, I think it's a little bit naive. You know, it's like the Maggie driving the fake steering wheel on The Simpsons. I mean, I literally think that analogy applies. And I'm not just being hyperbolic. Like, I think we need to come to terms with that. And I mean, I don't know. I can go on forever. I just think it's really important.
It's really important, though, that people start being honest and realistic, because a lot of people are thinking that, you know, it's all corrupt and it doesn't work. But, you know, I'll just keep playing along because that's what we have to do as citizens. And that's not true. That's not what we have to do as citizens. And again, I honestly believe no matter what, because I don't think it's the Democratic Party. I think that the people that are pretending to be the DNC, some of them, like you said, really do believe that that's what they are. They are really a captured entity. The whole thing is captured. But the Democratic Party is really there's multiple factions to it. There's the hardcore, real, legit socialists. The Democratic Socialists of America, believe, in my opinion, are socialist light compared to the real socialists that have a lot of say and a lot of sway over there and put a lot of money in. But really, again, it's just useful people using these people. But I don't think the Democrat Party is democratic. I think really what's running over there is the globalist elite billionaire class that's they're in. What I do believe also is that they don't care about 2024. They're not gonna campaign. They're not gonna do what they have to do. What they already believe is that they already took it. They're already taking it. Mm-hmm. And I believe that when they install right in front of all of our faces, no matter what happens, their one party system that they believe that they will install at the day of the election in 2024, that one party system will be globalist, not American. And that's where my problem is getting people to realize that. It's not just not another election cycle. It's not just another election. I really do believe that the entire Constitution, Bill of Rights, all of it, sovereignty, all of that is on the line. And not because I think it's left or right, but because I think that it's you know, either you want America to thrive, succeed, and take it back ourselves, county by county. I agree with you on the local levels is really the way. Or you are kind of putting down your weapons and accepting the fact that America, as we knew it, is over. And when I saw Joe Biden talking to the UN, that's what I heard him saying was essentially him and Barack Obama in 2015 signed on to Agenda 2030, and they're almost there and they're doing a great job. So everyone should just accept it.
Yeah, you know, but I think it's important that we recognize, I mean, the two-party illusion concept in general. Like, I could easily point out that it seems very clear that there's one side that seems much more irrational about taking rights away. But at the same time, throughout history, it's always done this. Right. The teeter totter of the party. I mean, I make this point all the time. Not long ago, it was the crazy evangelical right trying to do things, you know, and that. Yeah. But that's just the framing. Right. And so it's I think we need to we need to recognize that the individuals, like I said before, might actually believe these concepts. And that's why it's hard to see the difference. Maybe some of them think they're trying to fight the left or whatever else. But like, for instance, socialism in my mind is no different or more compromising or more concerning than democracy, than fascism, than any of them. They're simply governments that become power collected at the top. We're literally watching what so-called democracy can happen, how it can be the same thing in this country right now.
Right.
So yes, I'm on guard to any of them. I don't think it's fair, though, to say that a socialist is more dangerous than a fascist or somebody who believes in democracy. I think at the end of the day, there are people that believe in these different forms of government because they believe that might be able to benefit society. There's those that exist. There's those that believe socialism could be used to effectively stifle humanity more, and they may believe that. But I ultimately think that the biggest risks we currently have are, like, I think both socialism and fascism are kind of just two sides of the same coin.
Right,
I mean, it
I
goes
agree.
The same
I
direction.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
But so that point being stated, I think we're at a point where if I had to guess, I don't think it makes much sense to remove the illusion of the election. You see, my point is that if it's not an illusion and I'm wrong, then I get where you're going with that. That they want to just get rid of our ability to influence. That makes sense. But I'm not of the mind that I think that's already happened. So it's to remove that would be effectively showing us that we have no. And I don't think they want to do that. I think they'll happily let us drive that fake steering wheel off the cliff forever. Like, I don't think they care. So that's kind of where I look at that. But going back really quickly to the point about how you can make a difference, there's two points that I think are really important, or really just one that I really want to stress to people. Because the common argument is that because they don't have another option, And I get it. It's hard to think of what else you could do because they've made such everything surrounds or, you know, kind of orbits the idea of the election, you know, right. Pretty much everything politically. So it's difficult to go, okay, well, if I can't do anything else, then I'll just go do this. But abstention is something like jury nullification is something that's been basically robbed from the American people. Yes. They just pretend it doesn't exist. For those who don't know, which I'm sure you probably talked about, jury nullification is the idea that a jury can supersede everything in the court if they decide. Look, even if the charge is there, even if all the evidence points to the fact that this person is guilty, they can stand up and go, we don't think this is justified. What logically, they can lay out an argument and say, we don't think that the punishment meets the crime, and they can go, we waive it, like, or whatever the word would be, we dismiss this, right. Whether the judge thinks so or not. That's a crazy concept that puts the power in the people, right. So they don't tell you about that. People will protest on the out front of courts and saying, you know, jury nullification, and they arrest them. That's happened twice that I've seen. It's crazy. Right. So the point is to the concept of abstention. Most Americans, I mean, almost all of them, don't recognize that abstention is not ignoring it. Abstention is very different than someone who doesn't participate. Abstention is literally participating. Abstention is going in there and writing down, I abstain from this vote. Like, my vote is an abstention. And what that means is I either feel that the election is compromised or that the choices aren't, like, we have two out of realistically hundreds of candidates that were only being shown. So that's not fair. It's not valid to me or whatever, X, Y, and Z. You don't agree with what's going on. So if you can check that box, which should be one of the options, by the way, which isn't there. So they've right. removed that from you. They've taken that ability away from you. You can, like, imagine what it would look like. Steve and I always talk about this, that right now the biggest voting block in this country is people that don't participate.
Right. I know. And I say it all the time too. People don't even get it, that's the truth.
Yeah. Exactly. And then within the voting, the largest block of that is independents. And yet we still only end up left and right. So the point is, if we could actually go in and check abstention, and then they were honestly going to tabulate it, which I know they wouldn't, we would recognize that most people don't even agree with the very construct that we're putting forward. That's powerful. So I argue, if you want to do that, go in there and write down abstention on the ballot. They won't count it, but it's the beginnings of something that you're protesting the illegitimacy of what we're being given. And that doesn't mean that we can't make it better, you know, and the idea that no matter what they do, removing elections or going in this global government direction, they can't remove America, the United States, or what that means to us from people that believe in the Constitution. Because I'll be the first to tell you that I think that those things weren't exactly, you know, there's more to the story. A lot of people in that very room didn't agree with how it went. And I think it was early, in very early stages, bastardized. But it's taken root in people like us. I believe the Constitution has merit, especially if we hold to the concept of, you know, the finding of Marbury versus Madison, that if it's repugnant to the Constitution, it's null and void. It doesn't matter what legislation puts out a law. It's repugnant. Exactly. It's null and void. So these are things we need to remember. And that supersedes the illusions of elections, in my opinion.
Yeah. You know, and to me, we got to wrap up, but you got to come back. I do want to say this, though, because I this is how I feel. I feel like the entire vassal state known as the District of Columbia is unsalvageable. I feel like it is a complete cesspool. You know, obviously Whitney's books put a whole nother level on it of the blackmail and bribery and all of that. But again, I don't believe any elected position or I mean, politician or anyone that was appointed. Arendt calls it dictatorship by bureaucracy. Like, because it's a giant bureaucracy, we don't look at it as a dictatorship. And that's the truth. But also above that, I think that the lobbyists, I think that should be illegal. I think it's legalized bribery. I think the NGOs, think tanks, they have way more power than any elected politician, including the president. And obviously the multinational globalist corporations, you know, the Larry Finks and Schmitz and Gates of the world. So the bottom line to me is, as American citizens that are looking for solutions, I mean, is there a way, look, they put DC on the map as a vassal state and all of that. I mean, I feel like we should withdraw our consent for the District of Columbia to exist or to have any power over us. I feel like every single person that's elected for their state should have to live in their state, you know, with their whole thing where they stayed home for 2 years over the COVID knowing it was a total fraud. Can't they just zoom in for their meetings? And like, why with all these bills, aren't they coming to the American people and letting us vote on them? There's just so much that's wrong. And so many solutions that seem obvious, but as long as that they keep that power of that should not be going because DC doesn't represent us at all. What are your thoughts on the District of Columbia? I mean, I just really feel like, you know, maybe because of how they set it up as to protect themselves, maybe there's an opportunity to use it against them.
Yeah, it's certainly possible. That's a great, good idea to flesh out. I just think that, you know, if we're at a point where we've already gotten so compromised, and this again gets to the point of, you know, the first step in solving any problem is truly recognizing you have one. And we have to be real about the fact that we're not truly affecting the outcome here, whether or not you think your vote goes to, through some kind of translation, that, you know, that ultimately the District of Columbia point, I don't think we'll have any ability to actually affect change there if the people in power don't care what we're saying anyway, you know? So I ultimately do agree with you though. And I think that is, as most people truly see the bigger picture, understand, you know, that you've got these central points around the world, like London, you know, financial, the District of Columbia, these are bigger than the United States. And, right. And that from their inception, that's what's really interesting that we need to remember. And so I think, but yeah, we should be pointing these things out. And I think that to your point you made there briefly about the voting part, that's one angle to this that could make a lot of sense, that, you know, we have all sorts of different technologies or different concepts we could use today, or even just paper ballots, quite frankly, could be done in a way, as Pasta always points out, that exactly. There's ways you could do this in one day, even if it's a national election, but that we could have votes. Like, I'm not one that wants to lean into technology today just because of the obvious, but you could argue that you could use an online system or something that, you know, even blockchain, and it'll scare people away. I'm not advocating this. I'm just saying it's an option, right, that you could use these things to, let's say, have a portal where people vote on literally everything under the sun. It's every day there's, you know, votes, and the politicians are, right, we don't even need them in that case. That's, we just simply go and you tally your name and it goes save and we can see the outcomes. And, you know, obviously that can be manipulated too. But it's a hell of a lot better than pretending these people are actually the living embodiment of our will. It's ridiculous.
Right. It's funny. It's funny because I know that they don't like it. Wren talked about it too, but so did Thomas Jefferson. So have other people, about having wards and that there's different levels of government, but the most important one should be the neighborhood one, the local one. We don't do that anymore. Right. When I was little, if my neighborhood, there was robberies and stuff. So all the parents got together and started a neighborhood watch. We should have an America watch in every neighborhood too, or a county watch, right, or whatever, where, you know, we do take it back. And what you're saying about juries and jury nullification and all that, it's truly that people don't know the power that they have. They don't even know that exists. And, mm-hmm, and I'm sure that if they did, and there were many juries along the way that would have sat there and all been like, this is a fake case, which should be a crime anyway, to do a fraudulent case. Lawfare is so evil and it's so obvious. All of this stuff should be like, well, this isn't a case. There really aren't damages. This isn't true. Even what was going on with Dominion, they're suing all these people. I know a lot of people, millions of dollars in debt because Dominion's suing them. They have endless money. And it's kind of like, well, who got hurt? Really, you guys won. So what are you suing people, right, for that questioned, right, you? So, I mean, there's so many concepts there. Go ahead.
No, I know we're wrapping. Well, it's just that's the plea bargain overlap. High Impact Flicks just pointed this out, that the system is designed in a way to the average person is so terrified of the charge of, you know, you jaywalk and you can go to jail for 15 years or whatever the ridiculous overlap is. So they go, whoa, I'll take the plea bargain, you know, just in case. And all the lawyers push that and they make their fee. And so you never have justice. You just get, charged with something you can't defend yourself for. And then you get spun through the system, you know, and it's so many examples like that of how this has been weaponized against us, you know, and we just don't understand our own rights anymore.
Exactly. And that's what I hope of people like you and other people out there that I get involved with and I bring on the show. It's kind of to be like, okay, we all agree that something's very, very wrong, and fixing it in any way that's been done before is not going to work. And we have to come up with new ways. And it's kind of like, you know, there's a revolution, but it's more of an evolution. And of course, you and I say this all the time, violence, they win. They win if we go violent. That's just not going to work out. So there's so many things we can do. And that's why I think your voice and your website is so very, very important, because it's very, very, like we talked in the beginning about being a chef. You put all the ingredients together, you bake the cake, you hand it to people, and they can see it. And I hope you'll come back. But please, everyone, please go to The Last American Vagabond. Your mind will be blown, and you'll probably spend about 5 days there, all the way back to the everything they've been writing about. But Ryan, can you tell everyone where to find you, how to follow you? You also have a podcast. So share with my audience how to continue on learning from you.
Yeah, the best place is thelastamericanvagabond.com. And all the links will be there, to the podcast, to our Substack, to everything else. Cool. And I think that's usually the best. You know, don't let them be the conduit between you and our information. Go directly to the source. And by the way, just, I know that there's not a 15-year charge for jaywalking. I was just making an analogy for those. I just thought of that off the top of my head. But but thank you for having me.
You could say that.
Yeah, but thank you for having me on. I really enjoyed this conversation. Let's do it again soon.
Oh, yeah, we will. You're the best. And I have to tell you, everyone out there, you really got to check out Newer Voices. There's a lot of people out there, if you don't know of Ryan and some of the other people I've had on lately, I'm having them on for a reason. We can save this country, we the people, ourselves together, but not if we don't realize that it's up to us. Thank you so much, Ryan.
Thank you.
As you know, I love Mike Lindell. He's been a pal of mine and a supporter of the show. And honestly, he is a warrior for America. He is not giving up on this country. He is not giving up on you. He's not giving up on freedom and truth and justice. And that means that you should be going to MyPillow because so much is going on over there. Two pillows for $19.98, giant sale for the 20th anniversary. There's an overstock sale for 80% off, which is awesome. We love the slippers. Well, everyone loves the dog beds. Everyone, there's so much over there. And what you have to know, I love Mike Lindell. We have been all over the country with this man. He is a tireless warrior for America, for God, for country, for truth, and for justice. He is not giving up. He has an event coming up. Again, he has a whole nother event. He has got more evidence. He's gonna keep fighting. He's gonna keep going. That means that you have to also support him. But the best part about him is he supports me and other creators, and it really matters. He's keeping a lot of truth out there by giving me a code called the Mel K code. So if you go to themelkshow.com, go to our partners page, scroll down, you hit the My Pillow, you're going to take you right to the Mel K page. Use the Mel K code when checking out. It really, really makes a difference. I can't tell you guys how much I am so grateful to all of you. Everyone that have donated or gone to my partners, they are all vetted. They are all America first. Mike Lindell is an amazing man. We need to support his mission, and you guys supporting him and supporting me and using the Mel K code is really making a huge difference. There are so many, so many great things on that site. I will tell you, these are the best towels on planet Earth. Great specials right now. They're always doing something great over there. Support me, support Mike Lindell, support the United States of America. Enjoy the show, and I'll see you on the other side. For months and months, me and Mike L have been talking about the water supply, what is in there. There are pharmaceuticals in the water supply. There are all these chemicals, lots of pollution. We've had all these natural disasters that leave our water not nearly as clean and certainly not as God intended. We know how important water is for our health. So we have been on a mission to try to find the best alternative to the water that is out there, including bottled water, which of course, we did a whole show on everything that's in bottled water, which is almost as shocking as what's in our natural water now. So we found the best partner we could in Healthy Hydrogen. This is a portable bottle that I use all the time, but also there are many options over there. You can get a full house system. You can get a tabletop system. You can get for your shower, for your office and business. They have so many great options. If you go to themelkshow.com, we have partnered with them. So it's on our partners page, Healthy Hydrogen. I am telling you right now, the difference in this water and what it will do to your health in general is incredible. If you have inflammation, your immune system has problems, anything that you are thinking you don't know the solution for, this could be the game changer. We've been looking for the missing piece, and I believe the missing piece is the water. We are so excited. They have so much science backing all of their products. They have been tested by all different groups out there that do this for a living and look at water really in depth. We have the hydrogen aspect, which is truly fascinating. Nothing is more important than water. We all know that. So make sure you're putting the best water in your body. And I assure you, this is a true, true game changer that you will see right away and will improve your health and your family's health going forward. Go check out the Mel K Show partners page, Healthy Hydrogen, and get your health back from the inside out, starting with God's great water. We will see you soon. Thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of the show.